ओमज्ञानचिनिरं हस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाक चक्षुर्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Krishna is a serious person. He's a person. That's the first point. The person, each person has certain characteristics. Don't shake your leg. You know that? Everyone has certain characteristics which makes everyone's personality different from everybody else's. Someone is generally more jolly than someone else, someone is more intelligent than someone else, someone is more cruel than someone else, someone is more deceitful than someone else. So according to the different combinations and permutations of qualities, different personalities are understood, or the different personalities are formed. Now, Krishna is the Supreme Person, and it means he's supremely powerful. That's one quality which distinguishes him from everyone else. And in all qualities, he has all good qualities superlatively. Ananta Kalyana Guna Vishishta. He is decorated with all transcendentally beneficial qualities, unlimited qualities. The one quality about Krishna is that he is serious. Serious in the sense not whimsical. Not that he can't joke and laugh and play. But everything he does is meant for the benefit of others. That is another important point. Kalyana guna. His qualities, they are meant for the benefit of others. Closer. So Krishna here is inquiring seriously. His father may have thought he was just a child, and so how could he inquire about an adult activity of performing a sacrifice? Adults who are serious about the meaning of life, about improving their lives, they perform sacrifices. People who are uncivilized, they do not perform any religious activities. But those who are civilized, they must perform religious activities. And those who are more advanced, they're more serious about religious activities. They don't take it merely, there's the saying, merely as a ritual. The sacrifice is a ritual. But it's not to be taken merely as a ritual. This idiomatic saying is there in English. That merely a ritual, merely a formality. But a sacrifice or a religious activity is not meant to be simply a formality. There's a purpose behind all activities. In at least those activities which are performed in the Vedic culture, there's a purpose behind all of them. We may wonder, well, why get up early in the morning? What difference does it make? You can rise later also. It's all the same, we may think. But it's not true. Because the early morning hours are particularly beneficial for spiritual progress. So the Vedic injunction that one should rise early in the morning, before dawn, it is not simply a rule which someone made up, but it has a specific purpose. So like that, all the rules in the Vedic culture have a purpose. They're not simply empty rituals. There was much, at one point in time there was much disillusionment or rejection of Hindu rituals by intelligent young men, superficially intelligent, who thought that, well, they're just rituals. There's no meaning to them. There's the idea that people were just doing it for no reason. And so they many young people, they are more rationally minded or logically minded people, rejected these rituals because they said, what's the point? What's the point of chanting Hare Krishna? What's the point of rising early? There's no need to do all these things because no one could tell them any good reason for doing it. So here Krishna is asking Nanda Maharaj, what is the reason for this ritual? What is the purpose? It's a very relevant question, which you might think that a child is just asking whimsically, because children, especially intelligent children, they have the precocious tendency to ask many questions. And you may think that, well, they don't know how to question properly. Children don't know how to question properly, so they ask silly questions. Prabhupada gave the example that when he was a young boy, his eldest son was young, he used to go with Prabhupada everywhere, because Prabhupada, when he was in Calcutta, he was a businessman, salesman, so he used to move around the city. So sometimes he used to bring his son with him. So in the tram, his son was asking so many questions. They saw a marriage party, and he was asking, what is this? Why is this big fanfare and hullabaloo? Prabhupada is explaining, this is a marriage party. What is marriage? And he was explaining, Prabhupada explaining that young man marries a young girl. So then his son asked him, well, are you married? And everyone laughed. I mean, the son couldn't understand why he was laughing. Of course, in the modern age, that question may be a relevant question, because many people, they have children without being married. Or they're married and then they're divorced. But at least in those days, it seemed like a funny question, because the child is asking, and from his point of view, using his intelligence, but he doesn't actually know how to question properly. So his questions, they're irrelevant and foolish. Actually, many times people ask me questions, and I tell them, actually, you please don't ask any questions. You don't know how to ask. You don't even know what you're talking about. So there's no use to ask. You please read some books first. Just on Sunday, one young girl came up to me. I told her the same thing. That you don't know enough about this subject to question, even. You're not fit. They'll talk about spiritualism, and well, all spiritual people, they should perform work. It's more important to do your duty. And what spiritual life means, they have a complete misconception. What duty means, they have a complete misconception. And so their questions are just full of so many meaninglessnesses that they have to hear first and read before they can even begin to understand. Their ideas are so wrong that they have to hear regularly to start to get the right idea. They want an answer to their question, but their question is based on so many misunderstandings. So Nanda Maharaj may have been thinking that Krishna is just a young boy and he's asking these questions, and though it may sound like a serious question, sometimes a child can ask serious questions, but they don't understand the implications of what they're asking. So it may seem that they're asking seriously, but actually they have so many misunderstandings. So Nanda Maharaj might have thought that, well, it's very difficult to explain to Krishna about the whole, to answer this question, why to perform sacrifice, then we have to understand the whole cosmic situation and what is our position in it. He might have thought this is hardly a subject matter for children. Actually, it is. This subject matter should be explained from childhood. Komara achara pragyo dharman bhagavataneha dhuravam anusha janma tadapya dhruvam arthadam. This Prahlad Maharaj said that this human life is temporary, but nevertheless it is very valuable, because but in the human form of life, we can get the actual meaning of life. So for that purpose, one should follow Bhagavad Dharma. If one is intelligent, he should follow Bhagavad Dharma even from childhood. This should be taught and understood. It's so such a serious subject matter. Sometimes we see even young children, they're very serious about spiritual life, even from a very young age. Or sometimes we see people, they're very old, and they're not serious about anything. They're simply joking. Of course, joking is not disallowed. Joking is there, but simply making empty jokes just to make a laugh, just for the sake of entertainment. And that is foolishness. Joking may be there, but that should be in connection with the absolute truth. Not simply laughing at others' misfortune or just making some puns just for the sake of it, just to show how intelligent one is or to make others laugh as an entertainment. So that is foolishness. That is a waste of time, waste of breath, waste of the human form of life. So Nanda Maharaj was thinking himself, I'm an adult, I'm more serious. So Krishna, he's just a young boy, what can he understand about this? But actually Krishna is very serious, and as will be seen, even as a young boy, he was talking apparently elevated philosophy. Next we'll see he'll be talking this Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which is elevated in one sense. Actually it's not at all elevated, it's simply animalistic sense gratification. It's nonsense. And we talk about the six philosophies, but any philosophy except surrender to Krishna, it's all nonsense. But it's elevated in the sense that it requires much intelligence and Vedic study to understand it. So in that sense it could be considered elevated. It's not expected that a child can grasp the intricacies of these different philosophies. But Krishna, as he will show, that he understood this philosophy, at least he could present it to Nanda Maharaj, even though it's all nonsense. It's not, actually we say we have to follow Shastra, but we also have to know what to follow. Because in Shastra there are so many funny ideas, there are many strange things written in Shastra also. So not everything is meant for everybody. So even Krishna himself, when he speaks Karma Mimamsa philosophy, that doesn't mean that we should follow that. Everything has to be understood in context, and everything has to be explained by those who are Shastravit, Tattvavit, those who know Shastra. To know Shastra is one thing. There are many people who know Shastra. They're Shastravit, but they're not Tattvavit. They know Shastra, but they don't know what is the meaning of the Shastra. So Krishna, of course, is both Shastravit and Tattvavit. But soon he'll be speaking that which is a tattva, that which is wrong understanding. But at least it shows he understands some philosophy, which wasn't expected by Nanda Maharaj. That we find in the New Testament also, that when the young boy Jesus was 12 years old, he was speaking with the priests in the temple and speaking to them about religious philosophy. They were surprised. They were very surprised. Young boy, how can he understand so many deep things? So generally it's not expected that a young boy can understand so many things. But actually if they're trained, then they can pick it up. That point that Prahlad Maharaj saying at five, from the age of five they should be taught this Vedic philosophy. Actually traditional Vedic Gurukul education, Upanayanam, that's usually from age 8 for Brahmins, for other castes, at a different age. But that's still within Kumara Vasta, within Kumara age. But Prabhupada said from age 5 they can be taught. That means that even if they're not in Dharma Bhagavata, in Bhagavad Dharma, it may be even earlier. For Vedic study, it may be from age 8. But for Bhagavad Dharma, that may be even earlier. There are many rules for studying the Vedas. One should not study during the Sandhya. One should not study on Amavasya. Yesterday was Amavasya. There are so many days and so many conditions you shouldn't study, and it's difficult to understand when they would study at all. But these don't... This is for Vedic study. But for studying Puranas and for studying Bhagavad Dharma, there's no such restriction. One could, Vedic instruction also, that should not be given to Stri, Shudra, Dvijabandhunam, Trayinaveda Gochara. Women, Shudras, and fallen members of the upper castes, they're not fit for studying the Vedas. So, there are so many restrictions for studying the Vedas, but for studying the Bhagavad Dharma, that should begin at a very early age, as soon as possible. As soon as the children can start to understand, they should be taught Bhagavad Dharma. And practically, we've seen that if children are taught from a young age, they can pick it up quickly if they're so fortunate to have the opportunity, and they're fortunate to grasp that philosophy. That even young children, they can go to big sadhus and point out what are the faults in their philosophy and embarrass them like anything. So that's one nice preaching policy, to have children preaching. I remember in Bangladesh there was one young boy. He was about 8 years old. So by good fortune from previous life, whatever, he was quite adept in Vaishnava philosophy, so we used to take him around and he'd be giving lectures in front of 2,000 people, speaking very nicely on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And people were surprised and impressed. Oh, young boy, speaking so nicely. So that was, obviously there was some ability picked up from a previous life, some bhakti from a previous life. So generally it's thought that children are not serious, but Krishna is very serious. Vedic culture means to be serious. It may be thought that maybe a child wouldn't be serious, but actually Vedic culture is for making everyone serious. And the training begins from a young age, from even before children can walk or talk. The training in Bhagavad Dharma begins from the very beginning of life. So the training is how to make serious. In the modern age, they protest that why should children be disciplined so much? And why should they... You see, they don't like this idea that they have to bow... Children will bow down to a guru and they should be disciplined. And they don't like... But actually, that's necessary for their training so that they can perfect the human form of life. In the modern age, the idea is there that one should enjoy life. And their idea is that Kumara Acharat Murukho. From the very beginning of life, those who are foolish, how shall we say, Indriya Tripti, Indriya Triptasya Payatna. Anyway, I like this. That one should, from the very beginning of life, one should enjoy the senses. They should watch TV and they should have sex education from the age of 8. So they, including homosexual education in case, you know, they can, don't want to deprive them of anything. This is going on in the Western countries. They're educated in sex from the age of 8. Not in all the countries, but including homosex. But, you know, this is another variety. Enjoy. So their idea is enjoy. Of course, they're suffering intensely, as we're seeing in India now. The people have given up their traditional way of life, and they're following the modern way of life, and people are suffering physically. They're completely unfit and unhealthy, full of so many diseases, and mentally also, people are chintama parimayam, full of unlimited worries, because that's what sense gratificatory life does to you. So they have this idea that no training, no submission to anyone, no discipline, and just lead a carefree life. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given the analysis, this Bhalo Manda Kai Hari Pari Chinta Heen Nabhavi E Deha Charibo Kona Din. He is given the idea of carefree life. Chinta Heen means, literally means carefree life. No worries, no anxieties, no problem. Bhalo Manda Kai Hari Pari. Sometimes I eat nicely, sometimes not. I go here and there, I wear different clothes, I see this and that. No problem. Carefree life. But I never think, Nahi Bhavi E Deho Charibo Konadin, that someday I'm going to have to die. So Vedic culture is based on the understanding that we all have to die. And we all have to get the result of our activities, either in this life or in a future life. So all the followers of the Vedic culture accept that. Even the fools who follow Karma monks, they accept that we have to have a future life. But they are thinking that we have to get the reactions of our future activities, so let us perform punya karma and enjoy. So they're fools. But more sophisticated fools than those who think that, well, just enjoy, eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. They're more sophisticated. They have some knowledge of birth and death, but they don't think that so-called enjoyment is all foolishness and it's the cause of suffering. They don't consider it because they're fools. But more advanced fools, more serious in their foolishness. But one who knows the real value of life, they will see. Those who are pragyaha, dharma, that kaumara achara pragyaha, those who are very intelligent, they perform bhagavad dharma, Krishna consciousness, knowing that there's no enjoyment in this material world. Now we got the human form of life. Now is the opportunity to get free from birth and death and go to the spiritual world by serving Krishna. So they use that opportunity. They don't spoil it. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam that we have achieved this human form of life after many, 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 many births. It's very rare to get this human form of life. But it's temporary. It's just we're born today and die tomorrow. Therefore, one who is very sober and intelligent will consider that this body is going to fall down dead soon. So before it falls down, I should prepare myself that after falling down, the body falls down, I don't enter into another one. And then the question may come, well, what about sense gratification? We should enjoy also. But Krishna says, Vishaya Kulu Sarvatasyat. Sense gratification is available in every form of life. You've already done it. Whatever you may consider, I would like to do for sense gratification, you've already done it millions of times. You may think, I would like to enjoy eating and sleeping and mating and fighting. You've already done it as a cockroach, a worm in stool, as a camel, an ass, as Indra. You've already done it many, many times. So now we should be serious to perform Krishna consciousness, devotional service. Prabhupada used these two terms interchangeably. Devotional service, Krishna consciousness. There was an important question that came up yesterday. Kesha Prabhu, who's left the class. No, he's there, sorry. That I was saying, for understanding philosophy, one has to perform service. So then the question may come, well, what if we just do the minimum? But actually, Krishna consciousness means to do the maximum. And there is no limit. Devotional service is unlimited. So we can say do the minimum, but the real aim is to do the maximum. And we're talking about, by service, we can understand, we're blessed by Krishna to understand, and we get realization. And what is that realization? The realization is to do service. Bhakti leads to bhakti. Bhakti leads to bhakti, and bhakti means devotional service. So all these things, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, especially, as I was saying in the Hindi class on Sunday, that devotional service, it means to be busy in Krishna's, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult. We find there are many sadhus who are simply sitting very peacefully. And that in Indian culture, that's considered something good. That's just to be able to be very peaceful. Just if you can sit very peacefully, that's considered. Of course, in the modern age, people are working like asses, as in the West. But previously, if a sadhu will simply sit in one place and not move, and he's content, he doesn't have any desire to do anything or go anywhere, he's just doing his bhajan, that's considered very good. Because it means the mind has to be very peaceful to do that. That's a sign of spiritual advancement. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult is an active cult. As Prabhupada notes in the Nectar of Instruction, that Krishna consciousness is not simply some sentimentality or idle meditation, but it is dynamic activity in the forefront of spiritual life. So active. Everyone should be active. Now that doesn't mean that everyone has to, it doesn't mean in the mode of passion. There's a difference between the activity of the fool and the activity of the wise man. Fool is running around, but he doesn't know what he's running for, or for what the purpose of life is. But a devotee is active for the sake of self-realization. Which means, yes, he may be very physically active also. He may be, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, dancing, traveling from place to place, very busily preaching. Or active means he may be sitting, chanting, or writing books, or doing accounts, or whatever. But devotee who's, this is a sign of a serious devotee, means that he doesn't waste any time. He's always active in Krishna's service, particularly for the sake of preaching Krishna consciousness. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. We should preach Krishna consciousness. So devotees should, by actively engaging in Krishna's service, they should be ideal, not idle. Two words are similar. Ideal is one word and idle is another word. You know what idle means? Idle means lazy. So, here we see Krishna is very serious. He was sitting also. He was preaching to people, dictating his books, but busy in Krishna's service, dynamic in Krishna's service. So we have to be careful, because the tendency is, when we get a big temple, the tendency is to find some corner. It's a big space, so everyone can find some corner and hide themselves away. And it's quite comfortable, so it's also conducive for elongated snoring. That is not the purpose of a temple. A temple is meant for activity. It should be activity. Everyone should be active in Krishna's service. This is the meaning of serious. Here, Prabhupada has, in this purport, has commented on how Krishna is serious. So devotees of Krishna, they should also be serious to understand the Absolute Truth and to serve the Absolute Truth. Hare Krishna. Any question about this?
What was Krishna's purpose behind explaining the materialistic philosophy? I mean, he is conversing with Nanda Mahaprabhu. What was the...
Why did Krishna speak Kamala Mama's philosophy, materialistic philosophy, to Nanda Maharaj? Well, the superficial reason was that he wanted to... it was a ploy to get Nanda Maharaj to give up the worship of Indra and to engage in the worship of Giri Govardhan. But specifically that Kamala Mama's philosophy, it's very... it's offensive to God, to the Supreme God, and particularly to the demigods also. Because Nanda Maharaj wanted to perform the sacrifice for the sake of placating Indra, because they're thinking Indra sends the rain, so we need the rain. But Krishna wanted to insult Indra. Actually, there's no question of a senior insulting a junior. That's called chastisement. Superficially, it seems like an insult. A junior, if he thinks I'm insulted by a senior, actually, it's not. There's no question of insult. That's because insult can only be when someone on the same level or lower speaks badly of someone else who's on an equal or higher level. So Krishna wanted to humiliate Indra. So he spoke this philosophy which says that we don't need the demigods. We don't need to do anything for the demigods. Forget the demigods. So he was deliberately making Indra angry. So that Indra would... he wanted Indra to retaliate. He was deliberately provoking Indra, just to show Indra how insignificant he is. And he was thinking he was very powerful. Very powerful. He could send the Sangvartaka clouds, which are meant for the destruction of the universe. So apparently powerful, but in front of Krishna, no more powerful than a fly in front of an elephant. A fly may think himself very powerful. He can fly. You can't do that. You can fly in the sky. If your arms aren't so strong, if you go like this, you can... So a fly may be thinking, I'm very powerful. He is powerful, from one point of view. In his own relative understanding, he's very powerful. But in front of an elephant, he's not powerful. An ant is very powerful. An ant can pick up something his own weight, or even bigger than himself, and carry it. But in front of an elephant, he's so insignificant that an ant will tread on him and he won't even know that he's killed him. So like that, Indra is so insignificant, that's described in the Nectar of Devotion, that when Indra sent the clouds to destroy Vrindavan, Krishna was thinking to retaliate against him, but then he thought, why should I bother? Indra is so insignificant, why should I bother fighting with him? Why should I waste my time fighting with such an insignificant person as Indra? Any other question? Srimad Bhagavatam.